Thank you for coming. Welcome to the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center Pinwheel Education Session on Back to School Anxiety. So the Pinwheel Education Series is a bi-monthly forum that brings together experts and the public to talk about mental health and mental wellness. And everything related to the Pinwheel series, including a recording of today's session, will be available in about a week on keltymentalhealth.ca/pinwheel. And we appreciate your feedback. If you can, take the time to fill out a feedback form, it helps us improve the Pinwheel, think about new topics for sessions, and hear from folks about what they really want to learn about or hear about. If you registered online through Eventbrite, you will get an email after today's session with a link to an online feedback form. And if you didn't, we have some feedback forms on the table that you can fill out before you leave. And we'd really appreciate the help. For those of you joining us for the first time, the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center is a provincial mental health and substance use information and resource center serving BC children, youth, and families. We offer peer support to families and youth, as well as people of all ages living with eating disorders. Please go to our website, keltymentalhealth.ca, for more information, resources, and our contact information. For people that have just joined us on the phone, having a bit of issue with the phone today, so if you can make sure to mute yourself either directly on whatever system you're using or by pressing *6, that will really help to make this go a lot smoother, especially because one of our speakers is joining us by phone today. So I really appreciate that.
Announcing participant.
And we might have a few of these as we go along. But I'm going to go ahead and start by introducing our first speaker who's joining us today. And it is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Rosalyn Catchpole to the Pinwheel. Dr. Rosalyn Catchpole is a registered psychologist and head of the Mood and Anxiety Disorders Clinic at BC Children's Hospital. She is a clinical instructor in the Department of Psychiatry at UBC and is CACBT-ACTCC certified in cognitive behavioral therapy. She is passionate about anxiety disorders treatment and loves finding creative ways to help kids and families be brave and boss back their worries. Welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I think I have being introduced anxiety. That's done now.
So yeah. Okay. You're here. You're ready to rock.
So do I start or do you introduce everybody? Okay. Great. So hi, everybody. Thank you for coming. This is so lovely. Back to school anxiety. Ugh. I have it myself. The lunches, getting all those duotangs. It's a common time. The sort of the slightly lower pace of summer is over, and there's a shift into school time. And I think one thing that's really important to know is that back to school time is a really common time for anxiety to pop up. It's a time of change, and there's a lot of unknowns at the start of a school year. You know, so worries like, will my teacher be nice, right? Will my best friend be in my class? Will that mean kid not be in my class? You know, what am I going to do for lunch? Where is my classroom? All these kinds of things are really common. And so the way today is going to go, I'm going to talk a little bit about anxiety in general, because I really believe strongly that we can't really talk about back to school anxiety without talking about anxiety and understanding kind of what it is and how it works. I think we'll provide a framework that will make the tips make sense. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some more general factors, and then I believe Cindy's going to talk about some practical tips. I may have a few extra things to add, and then Bethany's going to talk us all about some of her own experiences. So the most important thing I think it's really important to understand is that anxiety is a normal and healthy human emotion that is essential for survival. So our non-anxious ancestors, like, they haven't made it to today's day. Their first visit to check out this exciting new large fuzzy creature with big teeth, like, it didn't go so well. So having anxiety, having a fight, flight, freeze response in our bodies is critical and important. And so although it feels icky sometimes to experience anxiety, it is not dangerous and it's okay, and we can learn to cope with it. So that back to that fight or flight response, you know, it really is an internal alarm that's built in to help us with danger. So it gets our blood pumping and it prepares us to face threats. It works really, really well for things like fighting bears, right? Your blood gets pumping, you're really strong, you're ready to kind of go. when we're faced with an anxious threat, the trouble is we have all this extra energy left over, but not really a bear to fight. So what happens is we get these unpleasant physical sensations, right? That just feeling of tummy aches or headaches or racing heart or things like that. The best way to understand anxiety, in my view, is as a false alarm. So it's kind of like the smoke detector that goes off when you burn toast, or at least when I burn toast. it's an alarm system that's going off when it's not really needed. And usually the way I explain this to kids is I say, you know, you've got a really great imagination, and that's so cool. You come up with all these interesting ideas. You know, I love your stories. But what that means is you've kind of got a good imagination for also thinking about things that might make you feel nervous. So kids with good imaginations are the ones who, you know, you can imagine the movie running in their head of like the mean teacher who's like, hello, you know, what are you doing today? And they're creative and they've got a good imagination, so they really can picture it vividly. And when we picture something truly and vividly, we will get a more strong physical response. So it's important, I think, to normalize it and to frame it as something that is positive, but that sometimes runs away from us a little bit. As humans, all of us, kids and adults, we most commonly get anxiety in new situations or in situations that we haven't been in for a while. Hence the back to school problem. Right? Usually you get kind of used to it. Things typically kind of go okay. And then you had a couple months off, you've had some fun summer camps, and all of a sudden you're not used to it anymore. So this makes total sense from an evolutionary perspective. It's really good to be on alert the first time you go down through the thick bushes to check out a new berry patch, right? We're on the lookout for danger. So that's kind of the quick version of what anxiety is. It's a normal and healthy thing that sometimes will kind of run awry, and there's things we can do to help it get better. So the first thing I always talk about, because I think it's arguably the most important part, is really to model confidence in your child or teen's ability to handle their anxiety. Human emotions are contagious. So again, it keeps us safe in many situations to read fear in someone else's face and to react. As parents, we are particularly tuned in to our children's fearful emotions. It's not bad parenting, that's just natural, right? We're there to help our kids, to protect them. So when our kids look really anxious, we will often get a little bit of a physical response to that as well. So that works great when there's a real threat, like, you know, there's a box about to fall on your head, like those kinds of contagions are good. But when it's a false alarm, you know, if your child is displaying a lot of anxiety, or, you know, they're about to burst into tears, it's time to get out of the car, that kind of stuff, we can literally get that kind of sinking feeling, that racing heart, that stomach ache. And the temptation to sort of rescue the child and say, it's okay, sweetie, you know, let's go home today, we'll try tomorrow, can, for some parents, be very strong. Particularly when they're very distressed. So a child who's less anxious, who, you know, might tear up a tiny bit for a minute, that's a lot easier to kind of say, good job, have a great day, than the child who's really, you know, really stressed out, really anxious or crying. The thing to remember is, anxiety in our own faces will make kids more anxious. Fake it till you make it. Smile, have confidence, even if you're dying inside a little bit, and then if you need to go cry in the car later, I totally understand. And it's back to that smoke alarm analogy a little bit, right? When you burn toast and the smoke alarm goes off, you don't go, oh my gosh, we gotta get out of the house, quick, everybody, where's the fire extinguisher? We go, oops, we open a window, we wave the toast away. If you want, that's sometimes a helpful picture to have in your mind when your child is looking really, really anxious. We know, we're not sending them to a school full of tigers and lions. We're sending them somewhere safe, but their little false alarm has gone off and they're feeling like there might be some danger. So just modeling that idea that it's okay, I know you feel anxious, but I know you can do it, is quite a powerful phenomenon, which is why I talk about it first. It's just burnt toast. So your child's alarm is miscuing them. the two key factors when we look at, you know, what really helps from a parenting point of view with anxiety is one, acceptance. So we don't say, there's nothing to worry about, you know, don't be silly, this is fine. We say, I can see that you feel nervous, you know, I can see you feel bad, and I know you can do it. So it's that acceptance piece and that confidence piece that together really seems to be the critical combination for helping kids when they're feeling anxious. The other thing that falls out of this theory that I've been talking about anxiety is decrease the unknown as much as you can. So Cindy's going to talk, you know, in more detail about practical strategies. But remember that in general, the goal is to gradually get your child used to the new situation before it's go time. That might mean things like, for younger kids, like go visit, you know, the playground before school. The school is open this week, like the doors are unlocked. You know, maybe go have a little look around the school. If your child's returning to school, can you arrange a play date or, you know, some social time with kids they know? You know, help your child, again, let their alarm kind of reset a little bit on some of these other factors so that there's not as so many new things when it's time for day one of school. Facing our fears and actually doing it is the single most effective way to deal with anxiety. You don't tend to stay as anxious in that new berry patch after you've been 50 times and the berries were delicious and there were no bears. And that's kind of the analogy with school, is at the beginning, it's like, what's gonna happen? I don't know, I'm really anxious. And then as the child goes, you know, typically anxiety comes down a lot within the first week or two of school when the child is sticking in that situation. If you know specifically what your child's worries are, you can help to plan for kind of building them. We talk about like a brave ladder, right? Like, so thing number one is just go play on the playground, and maybe thing number two is kind of visit the school. If you know your child has more social worries, let's say, again, try to get those, you know, those social connections, those play dates, things like that going early. If your child is worried about factual information about school, find out from another parent, you know, kind of how the classroom runs or things like that. Don't let your child avoid. So avoidance, like staying home, you know, calling parents 30 minutes into school and being picked up and things like that, it tends to grow the fear, because what happens is when your anxiety is really heightened in a situation and then you manage to escape, you feel like you've just narrowly escaped with your life, right? There's a huge sense of relief that comes. And so then what kids remember next time is, thank goodness I narrowly escaped that dangerous situation of school. If they stay in the situation, what they remember is, oh, I kind of felt bad in the morning, but like, you know, so-and-so is super nice, and actually I love the teacher's, whatever, building blocks area for younger kids or things like that. So when they stay in the situation, what they remember is, I coped, I got through it. Maybe I didn't love it, but I am not dead right now, I survived. If they escape, what they remember is, whew, thank goodness I escaped. And so what that means is day two, they're a little more anxious. And if they've been out a week, you know, that anxiety just goes up higher and higher. I should have said at the beginning, these tips all apply whether your child has an anxiety disorder or just has some, you know, more mild back to school anxiety. If your child has an anxiety disorder, some of these brave steps might need to start a little sooner or might take a little longer, but the same stuff applies regardless. Again, taking those brave steps day after day is really what helps to kind of reset that faulty alarm, to use that analogy. Another thing that can be really helpful is check in with your child and kind of set aside some time to talk with them about how they're feeling. Not in the moment in the car when they're crying. Kids just can't. They can't take in information. It's like if you're running from a bear and I'm like, what's 12 times 14? Like, it's not the right time. And when they're really anxious and they can be kind of panicked, they're just like, how do I get out of this situation? So they're just gonna kind of keep arguing and things like that. So it's better to kind of set aside a calm time. You know, how are you feeling about school? What are you looking forward to? What are you feeling nervous about? And then kind of talk about it then. And similarly, you know, a week or two into school, how's it going? What's your favorite part about school so far? What's your least favorite part? And kind of check in that way. Another really key thing, so probably every single anxious child I've ever met does this, so if your child doesn't do this, let me know, and then I'll say every single child except one does this, is what's called reassurance seeking. So reassurance seeking is those questions you hear from your kid over and over again, the same questions. Who's going to be there? Who's going to pick me up? Are you going to pick me up, Dad? Wait, are you going to pick me up? What time are you going to be there? Where are you going to be there? And it's just this sort of anxious loop of like, tell me the answer, tell me the answer, tell me the answer. The child is doing that to try to decrease their anxiety, but it's they don't know that that's actually a terrible way to decrease the anxiety. Because as long as we're talking about what's wrong and what they're anxious about, it's just kind of cueing those physical symptoms again. So from a parenting point of view, one really concrete thing you can do, answer the question once or twice, and then if it comes up again, you just say, oh, we've talked about that, sweetie. Hey, let's go, you know, I gotta run to the grocery store. Why don't you come with me? We can pick out some new snacks for school. So it's okay to kind of redirect your child if they're in one of those spirals of reassurance seeking. Remember that building your child's ability to cope with anxious symptoms is the goal, not eliminating anxiety. Eliminating anxiety is not a realistic goal, and it's not really one we would want anyway. We want a certain amount of anxiety to keep us safe. And it's really kind of, it's children who are helped to climb up a brave ladder and face their fears, they learn a really, really, really critical life skill, which is I can do things even when I feel anxious. Or just because I feel anxious doesn't mean terrible things are going to happen. I get anticipatory anxiety coming here. Oh, gosh, who's going to be there? Da, da. You know, if I was like, oh, I feel pretty bad, I'm going to go, you miss out on a lot of life. So supporting kids and helping them to, you know, to kind of face fears and build that tolerance, I think is a great gift as parents that you can give kids. And they'll be so far ahead of the game for that first, you know, job they don't get, or, you know, bigger things that can happen. And I think we can all imagine just how many less things we would do if we didn't ever do anything that made us feel a bit nervous. I'm probably like talking for too long, but I don't have a clock. Yeah. Oh, I'm talking for too long. I'm going to stop. Sorry.
No, it's great.
That felt like 5 minutes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Catchpole. That was really great. Now I'm going to introduce our next speaker and try and go to the phone. So please, again, bear with us as we have this phone situation that I can't seem to be able to fix today. Again, I want to remind people on the phone line, if you're there, please make sure to mute yourself. And if you're thinking of leaving the call early, and I understand why people do and they have busy lives, if you're able to simply mute your phone or put it down instead of hanging up because it makes another loud announcement, that would be really appreciated on our end here. So I'm going to go ahead and try and, I think, take us off lecture mode. We'll see what happens.
Conference is no longer in lecture mode.
And I'm going to turn the volume up so that we'll be able to hear our next speaker. And now I'm going to introduce our next speaker joining us on the line from Victoria, Cindy Andrew. Cindy Andrew is a parent and former teacher who has worked in the healthy schools field for over 25 years. As the Western Canada lead for the Psychology Foundation of Canada, Cindy works alongside school, community, and early years professionals and parents to support their efforts in helping promote the mental health and well-being of children, youth, and families. Welcome, Cindy.
Thanks, Anna, and thanks, Rosalind, for getting us started. I really appreciate the burnt toast analogy, and I might even add technology to that, Anna.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, I think it's another one of the bigger stressors in life. So I'm delighted to join you, and I did send along some resources as well, and you may have touched on that, and I missed it earlier, but just letting folks on the line or in the room know that there will be lots of resources that are, you know, very practical and evidence-backed, et cetera, that are available through this effort to be able to support people moving forward. So I also really appreciate, Rosalind, your comment on this notion of focusing on the positives and looking at this as a resiliency-building kind of opportunity for our children. So I, like you, have, you know, back-to-school anxiety, and like our kids do, and it's been a long time since I either was in school or was a teacher, and in fact, my kids are now heading off to college and university, but you feel the same sorts of excitement/angst in the household. So my my contribution for today is just to remind us what I think probably intuitively most of us already know, but sometimes goes worth restating because we tend to overlook some of the basics. So, you know, a really good example, probably a really timely one, given it's, you know, now approaching 12:30 and people are probably hungry, is nobody's at their best if they're not well-nourished. So those practical things like healthy eating, opportunities for physical activity, you know, gradually ramping our sleep schedule back up to a normal school year kind of approach. I, you know, build on that. Time to just have some downtime, you know, to chill and to for creative play for children, to read a book or listen to music or go for a walk in the park. You know, some of the basics that are just good for well-being, period, are particularly helpful for helping us through, you know, some stress and anxiety-inducing kinds of times. Also want to pick up on this notion of confidence that we're wanting to instill in our kids. And, you know, in order to be confident, you need to have that sense of agency, that sense of I can do this. And so, and I love your notion of that bravery kind of ladder, Rosalind, and think about what are some of the competencies our kids need in order to climb that virtual ladder, so to speak. And so how do we help them develop those, not do it for them, but help them. And a really good example, and probably one of the
participants.
A great, very helpful, probably fundamental to helping manage life's, you know, stressful or anxiety-inducing times is problem solving. You know, how to help a child sort of chunk out a problem into manageable steps. That could be, you know, what am I going to wear, or how am I going to get ready for school, or how am I going to get to school, and have lots of those conversations that don't answer it for them, but basically, you know, as a parent, you're there kind of guiding and supporting and asking questions, but really helping them build their problem-solving, flexible thinking kinds of skills, right? So looking at, you know, what are some different kinds of solutions or approaches that they can take to manage through what they anticipate to be kind of a bumpy ride. I didn't mention Rosalind, but I hope, and certainly Bethany as well, if you want to jump in, by all means, feel free to do so. You know, one thing that I think is also worth stating, and you alluded to it earlier, Rosalind, in this notion of, you know, when your kid is, you know, sort of hit the wall and is not the time to revisit, so what do we need to do about this? You got to calm the body before the mind, and then you know once things are settled down and you're back in a happy place and they're back in a happy place, to really, you know, to say, gee, how can we approach that differently? What are some things that we learned? And so that notion of, okay, maybe things didn't go exactly as planned, and frankly, that's reality. I don't know about the rest of you, but there's lots of mistakes I make, maybe not on a daily basis, although there are days when it feels like it, but those are really wonderful learning moments, right? And that's what going to school is all about, is learning, is trying things, and if they didn't work, well, let's try something different. And really, in essence, that's what we're trying to do to help alleviate our child's angst that they might feeling about getting back to school and into routine. I also think it's real important we not lose sight of the fact that it's an incredibly positive, exciting time as well, and it also can be nerve-wracking. But, you know, learning how to manage, overcome some perceived challenges, get that sense of I can do this, and actually enjoy oneself, you know, that's a lifelong experience. And so again, you know, this back to school, things like immunizations, things like going to a birthday party of, you know, a new group of friends, those are all anxiety or stress-inducing kinds of things, but they're wonderful opportunities and learning moments and, you know, helping our child work through them. So practicing, skill building, you know, something we haven't stated, but I think it's pretty obvious as well, and I'm sure those of you on the phone would you're here for a reason, is first and foremost to, you know, to love and to be there for your child. And, you know, I'd add to the basics things like making sure you've got time time. You know, I think in my family, trying to find time for some one-on-one is sometimes a challenge. So is finding time for family dinners or family meal times. But I can tell you, it brings a real sense of connectedness and support. And sharing, and including when parents are feeling anxious or stressed out about something. And so, you know, we can model that for our kids because they are learning from us. And as you alluded to, Rosalind, you know, those emotions are contagious. So too are the way that we respond to anxiety situations. So thinking about how we model our behavior for our kids and supporting them and building their competencies and thinking about some of the basics and the household routines go a long way. Maybe I'll just stop there. I feel like I might be restating myself here.
Great. Thank you so much for your insight, Cindy. And we'll certainly hear more from you, I'm sure, during our question period. But we will have questions time at the end, but right now I want to move on to our last but certainly not least speaker. Bethany is here joining us. She's a local actress, a former assistant cruise director and performer at Disney World, but first and foremost, a big sister. She herself has struggled with several different mental health illnesses over the years, but it wasn't until she saw how each of her siblings had their own unique struggle with anxiety that she was pushed to want to reach out to help other people. She is eager to help others to let them know they are not alone and to help reduce the stigma behind mental health. Welcome, Bethany. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, everyone. Not going to lie, I have anxiety about this talk about anxiety, but going off about what Rosalind was saying, I just have a quick story with that about when you're telling your kids, not telling them, oh, we can just go home and try tomorrow, and just backing down and then feeling the relief from not having to deal with the anxiety. Long story short, last night I got an email that I had an audition this morning at 12:30, and so I emailed back and said, oh, I can't do 12:30, it's possible I could do earlier, and no one ever responded. And so I had so much anxiety, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. And then 10:30 this morning came, I was just gonna go at 11 anyway and see if they would let me go. And then so 10:30 this morning came, and I sat down on my bed and I was like, no, I can't do it. I have too much anxiety over this. I'm just gonna wait until I have to go to the hospital. I'm not gonna go to the audition. But then I had a moment where I actually felt strong, and I was like, you know what? I'm a badass. I can get through this, and I'm here, and I'm alive, and I did it. So
yay.
I find with myself, if I give myself the choice, if I say, oh, like, I'll see how I feel, or I don't have to do it if I'm really anxious, then 99% of the time, I just won't do it. But if I don't, in my mind, if I don't give myself a choice, if I just say, no, I'm doing this, I'm like, I don't have a choice, this is just what's happening, then I'll actually do it. But I wasn't always... It's really hard to get into that. Once after you do it, it gets easier, but it's hard to get yourself into that mindset. So when I was younger, I wasn't as good at that. Like when I was in middle school, I was getting ready to make the move over to the next building, which is the high school building, and I was terrified because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know who the teachers would be, where the classrooms were, which numbers were, if lockers were in which hallway, and on top of that, there would be a whole set of new faces of like the higher grades that I didn't know, I'd never seen before. And so that scared me so much that I thought moving to a different school would be the solution, because I thought if this school's giving me anxiety, well then I'll just go to a different one and I won't have anxiety. And so I begged my mother to let me go to a different school, and she agreed. And then so came the first day of school, this other school, and exactly the same thing happened. I was terrified when I got there. I was put in a panic. I didn't know where my first class was. At lunchtime, I just wandered around the halls because I didn't want to have to deal with finding people to be friends with or figuring out where to sit in the lunchroom. And then I ended up doing the classic eat in the bathroom stall. But realizing that this anxiety was not something that I could just run away and escape from, that it was something that was always going to be there and I was just going to have to deal with, helped me, because then I switched back to my old school, which I'd liked better to begin with. And then I found out that facing my anxiety, I found out how to face my anxiety and learn how to cope with it, which sounds like not that bad when you just say it like that, but it's not an easy task. For me, back-to-school anxiety is based mostly around the unknown and the uncertainty of what it's going to be like. Even if you go back to the same school, a new grade can be like a new set of teachers, maybe you have different students there, you have all new classes. And so I would tell myself that I just have to get through this one day, that after this one day, everything will be more familiar and more comfortable. And as the days go on and you keep getting through that one day, it will get even better. But the same would go with each new class. So like when you go to the new grade and you have, say, now instead of just science, you have biology and chemistry and this, and you have all these new classes, and then sometimes it can take a week or 2 weeks to get through all these new classes. So each time it would be the same thing, like, okay, just get through another one new class and then get through that. So it can be a lot. It would be really exhausting by the end of the week, because for me personally, being in social situations like school is really emotionally exhausting. And so when you add the anxiety of a new school year, on top of that, I would just be drained by the end of the week. So even really basic things like just getting enough sleep every night was really important for me to help me manage my anxiety and not let it bubble more than it already was. One of my little sisters is going into grade 11 this year. And when I asked her what makes her anxious about school, her answers were all the work she'll have to do and the pressure she has to do well. And my anxiety around the work was always, I guess, one less, because my social anxiety was like much higher than that. But to do with the work, I would kind of handle it the same way. If I would get really overwhelmed thinking like, oh, I'm gonna have these exams and these tests, and there's gonna be all these projects, if you think about everything at once, it can be really, really overwhelming. So I would just have to, again, just take it one day at a time. I would set aside things that need to be done every day. So instead of looking at the whole picture of everything, I would make a list and I would say, okay, this is the homework that I need to do today or the things I need to do today. And then tomorrow I'll deal with the stuff that I need to do tomorrow. Just making it into smaller things so you're not looking at this huge, giant mess of it all. It would make it seem a lot more manageable. Also, if I was feeling really panicky before having to start the first day or just at a time in general, one just simple thing that would help me calm down that a teacher once taught me was it's like picturing a square. So you picture a square in your mind and you breathe in for four sides, you hold your breath for four sides, and then you breathe out for four sides. And if I was like starting to feel really panicky with my anxiety, that would make me feel more grounded and settled. Also, whenever I was feeling anxious when I was actually like at school around other people, a lot of the time I would look around and it would seem like nobody else was feeling that way, even if that's not true. Maybe they're just putting on a front like I was, but it would seem like everyone else was happy and calm. And so it would make me feel like me feeling this way was abnormal or there was something wrong with it. And so I think I was really closed off and I would never really tell people when I was feeling like that. I would just be like, oh, I can deal with it by myself. But I think it would have been beneficial for me to have someone tell me that I'm allowed to feel that way and that there's nothing wrong with me feeling that way. They can say, like, if it's becoming too much for you and you don't like the feeling, that here's some things you can try to deal with it, like taking everything in small steps and stuff like that, but that you are not less because you're feeling that way.
Yes. It's really important. Thank you so much for sharing your experience, Bethany. It's super valuable for all of us to hear and for people on the line. And just before we move on to having some time for questions, I just wanted to ask if any of our panelists have any last or additional thoughts they'd like to add, and then we'll move on to the room.
I'll be quick.
Okay. Rosalyn has something she'd like to share.
For younger kids, just playing school, like, you know, doing a little bit of that, kind of getting used to things can be really helpful. And for older kids, if they're nervous about, like, well, what do I do if someone comes up to me and they're mean, like, just role-playing that scenario, if your child is open to it. If they're too stressed and they're like, we're not talking about this, that's fine. But if they are open to it, that can be kind of helpful. And the other thing I think we didn't touch on directly is the use of rewards. So, you know, sweetie, I'm so proud of you. You have a great first day. I'm going to run to the grocery store and I'm going to get some cupcake baking supplies. And as soon as we get home, we're going to bake cupcakes. Like, just something to kind of shift into, something to look forward to and the positive. Strategically placed rewards early in the school year can sometimes make a difference. I literally taught my daughter to swim with lollipops. She was really scared. I'm like, well, let's just do this and then we'll go get a lollipop. So she was little. But anyway, so that can be kind of helpful. And as you may have picked up on, just humor. And, you know, it can all get very serious when kids are anxious. And I don't know, do some like bingo game with your older kid and go, okay, wait, I think your teacher's going to have blonde hair and I think there's going to be seven boys in the class. And like, I don't know, whoever wins the bingo game gets a prize. Like, just think about creativity and humor, because it's hard to be anxious when we're laughing and having a good time. I didn't touch on kind of when to get more help, so I'm going to say that super fast, which is generally speaking, like if you can't get your kid to school or you're getting your kid to school twice a week and all, you know, these tips aren't working, that would be time to reach out for help. If your kid cannot eat at school, you know, after the first few days or something like that, or can't use the bathroom at school, that might be something that needs a little bit more help. Or if they just seem like they're avoiding social activities completely, right? Like eating lunch in the bathroom for prolonged periods of time, getting sick on field trip days. Like if it just seems more pervasive, and again, these sort of tips to build the bravery don't seem like they're helping, that might be time to still try all this stuff, but maybe get a little bit more support. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I just want to pick up on one thing you didn't hear. Bethany, thank you as well very much for sharing what worked for you. And what we didn't hear was this notion of, I'm just going to focus on mindfulness or, you know, deep breathing or one particular thing. And that's this notion of, you know, what works for one doesn't work for the other. So it's really trial and error. It's also knowing that something like mindfulness, while it has a place, doesn't build the competencies that you heard us talk about, you know, the problem-solving skills, time management, the basics of getting enough sleep, all that sort of thing. So, you know, while we're tempted to want to rush to a perceived single solution, there isn't one. There's this buffet of choice that you need to just keep trying and finding what's right for your child. And now I'll shut up.
You don't need to, but I really appreciate your comments. That's, that's very helpful. We have some resources and some of them at the back on the table, and all of them are also available online. And if anyone has any questions, you can feel free to get in touch with us. You can find our contact information again on our website, keltymentalhealth.ca, and we can get you set up with some information or tools to get started on your journey.
Anxietybc.com has great checklists, information specifically on this.
Yeah.
I've reread them. I agree with everything that they say.
And I have a couple of the AnxietyBC worksheets here as well, since we do a lot of work with them. Now I want to go to some questions. First, I want to check in with telehealth, and if anyone from telehealth has a question, you can feel free to unmute yourself and ask our panel if you would like. Alert Bay, do you have a question? No? Perinatal, do you want to ask a question? I'll give you a chance.
No, we're fine.
Oh.
She's saying no,
okay.
We're fine.
No, we're fine. Yeah. Okay. Burns Lake? If I don't hear it from you, then it's fine. Okay, let's go to the phones. If anyone on the phone has a question, you can feel free to unmute yourself now and ask our panel.
Hello?
Hi. Go ahead. Go ahead if you have a question.
Participant exiting.
Okay. Maybe not. I'll come back to the phone at the end in case anyone changes their mind. And now we can go to the room if anyone has a question for
exiting.
Our panel here.
I'm in high school. I guess this is the third ending you guys. What if, you said you need to focus on, your basic healthcare as well. So what if, your anxiety is keeping you from sleeping and, you're just kind of trapped in the cycle of not sleeping and just getting more anxious the next day and not sleeping again and then crashing for 24 hours and then not sleeping and etc.
That's a great question. Do you want to say something about that?
You can talk first.
Okay. Anxiety and sleep disruption can go together really commonly. That might be an area that you need a little bit of extra support on if someone's really struggling with sleep a lot. General sleep tips that are really effective and also quite annoying, so they're a bit hard to do, is if someone is lying in bed worrying for 2 hours, what we're doing is we're training our body that when it's time to go to bed, we lie down and we worry for 2 hours. So even a simple step of, if you find yourself worrying in bed, this goes for parents, like anybody, get out of bed, sit in a chair or go to the other room or something like that. You know, you finish your worrying, try again. If you don't fall asleep in 20 minutes, get out of bed, go somewhere else, and then try again. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to train our bodies to have the association between being in our bed and sleeping. Sleep hygiene things. Don't look at your phone in bed. Don't do anything in bed other than sleeping. If you're a grown-up, you can add something else to that. we just want to keep the bed for sleeping. So that can be really helpful. And then I wouldn't recommend doing this without the support of a therapist, but there's a thing called sleep restriction, which is if you're really only getting 4 hours a night, sometimes in combination with a psychologist or another person who understands how to do this, what that actually means is you delay the bedtime and you just sleep 4 hours and then you back it up from there. But I don't recommend that on your own because you'll feel it's a hard couple of weeks to get through it. But sometimes those other tips are enough to kind of settle it down. We just teach our bodies we do not worry in bed. You have a bit of a problem with this if you experience what I do, which is you go on vacation, you go somewhere else, and you sleep like a baby, because you haven't practiced like worrying in that bed. So it might be a sign that you're slipping a little bit. No blue light a couple hours before bed. Try not to look at devices if that's impossible. Put something on your phone or your laptop. I have Flux on my laptop, so it just automatically goes on to shift away from the blue light. Those kinds of things can interfere with sleep.
Rosalyn, can I just jump in on that one? Is that, you know, one of my regrets as a parent of teens when they were first given phones, I silly me, these are the things we learn in retrospect, so wish it we had just normalized this notion of, okay, we're going to bed and so are our phones in the kitchen, and your eye touches and every other digital device, right? And, you know, I know it seems like such a basic thing, but you may not have given some thought to that, and the research tells us for sure kids are up much later than we think they are because they're busy on their various devices. So screen-free bedrooms are the way to go, particularly in the bedtime hours.
Thanks, Cindy.
The other piece about sleep stuff is get up at the same time every day, even if you're kind of crashing, because if we let ourselves have those catch-up naps and things like that, you can't sleep the next night is most of our experience.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm a parent of a child going to grade 2. I know that transitions are tough for him, but sometimes I'm not sure if it's anxiety
participant
or what
exiting.
It is and the way that it shows up and not listening as well and kind of other kind of behavior. And so I'm wondering if you can speak to how does anxiety show up versus whatever, I don't know what I would call it, just other stuff.
You just have a bratty kid.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point, because we don't always see little kids going, I'm so worried that my teacher will be mean. We will see tantrums at the end of the day. We will see misbehavior, you know, just general kind of acting out, low frustration tolerance, difficulty shifting gears, right? So it's like, but you said we were doing this. Like, oh, it's raining though. We need to do something else. But you said we were doing this. So those kinds of things, they typically go along with an anxious picture. I think, you know, it's not that there's a test of like, you know, yes, this is or isn't anxiety. I would generally take your cues from, if it seems to be settling when it's not a new period, it's probably a bit related to those transition times. And again, all those just basic tips about try to visit the school up front, you know, kind of go through it, have some play dates, like just try to decrease the newness of it as much as you can. And no, it's a hard first couple weeks, you know, like pull back on some of the other activities if possible. If you can get it together, I always say I'm going to do this, I never do. Like, you know, put some meals in the freezer. Like, if there's anything you can do to kind of decrease the family stress overall in what we know is typically a hard period, that could be helpful. Do as I say, not as I do. Thinking about cooking ahead is the first step to cooking ahead.
I know with like my siblings, my younger sister, when she's really anxious, she gets really angry, will like yell at you for no reason and kind of shuts herself off. And my little brother, you can tell he's really anxious. He gets really, it's almost trying, he's like, he's trying to outdo his anxiety with other emotions. So he gets really like silly, really like outgoing and outrageous. He'll just be like all over the place. And things I found with him is if I like offer to play a game with him or something that kind of like calms him down, yet like distracting him really helps. But I just find it's like so different in different people sometimes.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hi there. I have a question from the phone.
Great.
So I was just wondering if you have any tips for when you're dropping off your child at, so my child is starting kindergarten in September, and there's typically a lot of crying and panic clinging on to mom or dad. So do you have
participant exiting?
Do you guys have any tips for that? Because for me, I see it sort of like breaking
exiting
because I'm leaving for the
exiting.
Yes, I think we heard most of that. There was a few participants exiting. There's a great little video on anxietybc.com called Managing Separation Anxiety in Your Kindergartner. So that's a lovely, it's like 3 minutes long. That's a lovely one to watch. Different kids are a little different. Some kids, young kids with separation anxiety, will do better if you stay in the classroom for a few minutes, let them get settled, kind of pull your exit a little bit more slowly. For other kids, that just prolongs the agony. So again, going back to that smiling, communicating confidence, and sometimes just making that quick exit can actually be more helpful. So I would judge that based on your child. If you can go ahead. Yep.
Daycare, it didn't work, so I had the quick exit where I dropped her off and left, and she just cried and cried and cried for a long time. And the second part of my question is, I know you said not to let them escape, but I would sometimes pick her up early because she would be crying so much, and the daycare would call because she'd been crying for an hour. So in those situations.
Yep. So in situations like that, in general, I think the first thing to remember is our kid going into kindergarten sometimes looks different than our kid going into daycare. It's a new situation. It's not the place where they've had a lot of separation anxiety before. In situations like that where there's been a lot of separation anxiety, I think it's worth talking to the school up front if possible, popping in this week, seeing if there's any way to give the teacher a heads up and find out, from the school point of view, how do they like to handle this? Would they like you to stay for a little bit, kind of off to the side? The key, if you're going to stay in the room with your kid when they're having separation anxiety, the key is to be very boring, right? Look at your phone, don't engage. And then teachers are typically really, like kindergarten teachers, this is in their wheelhouse. It's quite common. And so then the more engaging, interesting teacher is more interesting than the parent. So I would probably, think about judging it that way. Does it seem to help to sort of do that more gradual exit? There's also gradual entry in most kindergarten schools where it's an hour the first day and things like that. In general, again, if their kid's being picked up kind of at the height of the crying, that is a bit more of an escape thing. If you're going to pick your kid up early, it's better to wait until they're settled. And with really severe separation anxiety, I have sometimes said, if you can be quiet, your mom can stay. But if you're this loud, then we'll need her to go a little further away, which is a little bit of a sneaky thing, but to kind of say, you know what, we want to see you calm and regulated, and then, your mom can sit right here. But yeah, ideally trying to not catch them in the height of that crying, because it will prolong the length of the separation anxiety.
Okay, that's a good tip. And then I guess, is there anything else like we can prepare her for, like at the drop-off, like if we can't do that gradual?
It's hard in kindergarten because, if you know some families up front, that's great. Some kids do, with separation anxiety, do better with like a buddy system where, they walk with a friend and the friend's mom. Our kids are mostly more anxious for us than they are for other parents. Again, we're the protectors. So for some children, that can be helpful to just, not have the drop-off be done by a parent. I make general comments here, not specifically kind of what works in an individual family's case. But yeah.
What about one idea, Cindy, here? The, that little something special from home that is tucked into the child's backpack, that is a visual reminder of, you love them, you're thinking about them, and how excited you are for them to be making this move into the big school. I don't think that's a bad idea, and it's not cumbersome, and it's sort of like even when you put little notes in your children's lunch boxes, just to let them know you're thinking of them. Those can go a long way to helping provide some comfort.
Okay, thank you. And then, sorry, just one last question. Do you guys have any recommended books that we can read to a 5-year-old about anxiety and stuff like this?
Tons.
If you want, I think we'll have to take that one offline, but you could contact the Kelty Center and we'd be able to provide you with some recommendations, and I can liaise with Cindy and Roslyn later.
And honestly, there are so many great book lists I've just looked at in the last few days. I think because we're not the only ones having this kind of conversation, that if you were to Google, storybooks for you know, talking about emotions or back to school.
Participant exiting.
Yep, some.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your questions. Does anyone else in the room have a question they'd like to ask? Go ahead.
I sort of understand that it affects kind of this age group, but do you find any particular age group is more prevalent, or is it changing over the years? Because our daughter's like 9, and we were actually quite surprised. She's always been really good at going to school until this past year. We were kind of surprised that this kind of happened at this stage, where it's in kindergarten.
You expected it more. Yeah. The prevalence is relatively steady. I think what changes is the type of anxiety. So for the little ones, it's almost always separation anxiety. What happens around 9 is developmentally and cognitively, they can suddenly start to think about things like earthquakes and mortality and sort of bigger kinds of worries, or more, you know, they get a little more sophisticated socially, so they start to notice those kinds of things more. So sometimes that's what we see, is a little bit of an uptick in, you know, those kind of general worries. Teens, you know, we see a lot that, again, peer focus in adolescence is really typical. It's preparing them, but then it's a lot of, like, the world is looking at me.
Well,
and
you sort of see that with teens. It sort of makes sense to us, right? But when you see it younger, mm-hmm. it doesn't make mm-hmm. sense of, are we, not we in particular, but in general,
participant exiting.
Allison Nichols?
I mean, I think there's a little bit of an increase in prevalence. I think there's also a lot of increase in awareness, but the prevalence is going up a little bit, as best we can tell. You know, it's hard to say. There's just so many factors, and I hate to make pronouncements about, you know, the whys. I think one thing that I will see sometimes is, I think, you know, collectively as a society, there were probably more firm limits before. Like, they had truancy officers, and I'm not saying that's the way to go, but, you know, there was just much more kind of societal expectations that we do things, and kids felt anxious, and then they had to do them. So sometimes I think there's a little bit more in our, all the good parts of, like, we're more sensitive to our kids, and we talk about them and that kind of stuff, but sometimes those sort of firm boundaries can shift a bit. But I don't know that that's relevant in all cases, but sometimes we just get really bright little 9-year-olds that can get a little ahead of themselves about sophisticated worries, and it's cool, they're going to make great adults, but there's a little bit of coming to terms emotionally with things. Yeah. Do you have anything to add about that?
I could actually add a little bit about that. I have lived experience with anxiety as well, and I think around 9 it is different things. Like, it could be like social things at school in terms of friend groups changing and that kind of stuff is what I remember being anxious about around those ages in elementary school. So there's just, yeah, shifting factors happening, things that you're more aware about or can become more worrisome. So yeah, just checking in about that kind of stuff can be helpful for sure. Yeah, we have time for maybe one more question. If there is anyone in the room or on the phone that would like to, now is your time to speak up. Go ahead.
Just a quick question. Adults are really scared that you'll be late.
Participant.
About being late.
Remember that used to happen to me when I was younger. I would get up before anybody else and I would be like completely dressed in my uniform and I would just sit there and wait for everyone else to get ready. But I don't really know how I dealt with it.
When there's, so first of all, for the rest of you, don't have your kids be late. Like, you know, in general, kids need some time to prep. If it becomes this like fixed fear, you know, you're on time and it becomes a really unreasonable kind of fear about being late, sometimes what we need to do, again, you know, maybe with the help of a professional, maybe you can try this on your own, is, well, okay, let's run this science experiment. So you feel like you're gonna be late for school, and then what do you think's gonna happen? And then you think the teacher's gonna yell at you. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, we're gonna do a science experiment for 5 days, and then at the end of the day, we're gonna have a little reward for our science experiment, and we'll take you out for pizza or something like that. So here's our chart, Monday, okay. Were you late? Yes or no? No. Okay. So you were worried you were late, but you weren't late. Okay. Tuesday, da, 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 da. If they're ever late, you can say, okay, and then you were late. And well, then it's really not an issue. If they are, I mean, the slightly more hardcore approach, which I would only do in therapy when I knew a kid well, is to say, okay, today we're going to be late. You're going to be 10 minutes late. Because again, that fear is like, what is going to happen? Well, probably nothing's going to happen, right? Probably the teacher's going to say, oh, I see you're late. And if it's not a common pattern, then I don't know. I've never heard a story of a teacher yelling at a kid in front of a class for being 10 minutes late once. Maybe that has happened in the world. But so that's the other piece, is sometimes we actually need to do the thing the kid's afraid of for them to learn that horrible thing I was imagining and spending all this energy getting ready for early did not happen. But you probably don't want to spring that one on your child because they may assault you.
I think that is helpful, though, because I feel like that's why I was always worried about it, is because I was like, oh, if, like, I'm late, they're going to yell at me, and this is going to happen, this is going to happen. But then if you just tell them, like, what's the worst that's going to happen if you're late? Like, all this big catastrophe stuff isn't going to happen. So I think knowing that would have helped me deal with it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, one of my favorite little strategies with my kids was the what if, right? So those what if kinds of scenarios, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen and what do you do? And sort of just that is really helpful.
The most effective kind of therapy for anxiety disorders in kids includes a large part of what we call exposure therapy, which is just practicing doing the things we're afraid of and testing out those big worries and see if they come true or not. And so that's probably one of those kinds of fears that's in that realm of just, it's just not realistic what they think is going to happen. And sometimes we got to test it out, because it's sort of like, you know, if you hate public speaking, like, you can talk to someone in advance and they'll be like, don't worry, it'll be really good, like, the parents will be nice. But until you actually just go and do it, mm-hmm. it doesn't really settle the anxiety that much. So that could be a little bit about what's going on.
Just because you mentioned exposure therapy, I'm a teacher and I'm eventually going to be a counselor. I just started my program. Just wondered if you could mention anything else that you find has been really successful, like exposure therapy, just something that I could explore more.
Yeah, I mean, the general, more broad term would be cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. That means looking at the way we're thinking. It means the way we think and the way we feel and the way we behave are all interlinked, right? So if we're really stressed to do something, we're feeling nervous, we think it's gonna go badly, our bodies feel anxious, and then we don't do it, that kind of cycle goes round and round. The reality is, for in most situations, the biggest component when we kind of take that therapy apart is the behavioral part, which the B should stand for brave, is like doing those brave things step by step. So yeah, you can look up cognitive behavioral therapy.
CBT is the best approach for anxiety in particular?
It has the most evidence, by far. Yeah. Yeah. So it's the recommended, if there's an anxiety disorder present, the sort of expert guidelines, I guess, or recommendations are: one, try cognitive behavioral therapy; two, if that hasn't worked, add medication. I mean, that's the sort of research-based approach to anxiety disorders, which isn't to say there aren't other add-ons and things that might be helpful, but what you want to avoid if you've got an anxious kid is just like going into an office and playing with someone and not really, like, you kind of got to get on with it a little bit. So that's that piece.
Great. Well, that's our time for today. I really want to thank our speakers today in the room and on the phone. That was awesome. You had so much to share. Your insights on back-to-school anxiety, I think, is going to be helpful for a lot of people. And I wanted to thank also people that attended in person, on the phone, by telehealth. This is what makes the Pinwheel what it is. So thank you so much for coming. And the Pinwheel series will reconvene on Tuesday, October 24th, and our topic will be trans youth mental health. Enjoy your afternoon. Thanks for coming.